All right, Scott, do that thing where you start.
Surprise! We're back for another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. I don't know if we're going to have a show intro on this show. Bill, are we going to have a show intro? Bill Shiken with us.
No.
Because we surprised the viewers last week.
Yeah.
And we heard they were surprised. These people skipping over the beginning automatically and then had to go back.
I am going to leave in the part where I said, Scott, do that beginning thing.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. And of course, with us is Mr. David Palin. Let's get him in there.
Thank you for remembering. I'm over here in the slow lane.
You're on the right.
On the right. See, on the slow lane.
Exactly.
Unless we're in the UK, then I'd be in the passing lane.
Bill, what were you about to say?
Oh, I was just saying that this is episode 98. We never said what episode it was last time. I felt like I usually do that in the intro, and then I didn't do an intro, and I was thinking, hey, never. But it's not like people are going to be like, oh my God, I'm lost. Which
right.
episode is this?
But I
this
can't is, listen unless I know the episode number. Yeah,
this will be 98.
All right. Well,
we are almost there. We are close.
We're close.
We do have a lot to talk about today, though, because just so everyone knows, Bill is getting on a plane to Japan in about, 11 hours?
6 a.m. Yeah.
So we got to, 11 hours. There you go.
We'll talk about
13 hours. So we've got the Supercross Cup. We had a lot of racing in the U.S. We talked about last week. We got the Supercross Cup days 1 and 2, Major Taylor's days 1 and 2, and CXLA days 1 and 2. So... are you guys ready to tackle this?
I'm ready.
Supercross Cup day 1 for the women. In first place was Christelle Farrar Bruno. In second place, Cassandra Maximenko. Third place, Catherine Cumming. Fourth place, Regina Legg. Fifth place, Ruby West. Decent field there. Looked awesome. The Canadian, we're going to say it, taking the win.
you're gonna say it. Canadians did well in the U.S. this weekend.
Yes, they did. They did. I passed it at Indy. I passed Vandenham in the parking lot, and I'm like, "Hey, Pride of Canada!" And he kind of like looked at me funny and like walked away. I don't think he knew who I was. did anybody note anything specific about this race? I think pretty straightforward. We'll just go with the results there.
I'm just glad that the actual real Canadian on that team won. I mean, not to discount Tyler's one quarter Canadian heritage.
Didn't he send out a tweet about
that we've all learned about now? But yeah, the Canadian with the Dutch name. That is the most confusing team out there.
What's that?
That Garneau Easton team.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
they have Canadians who aren't Canadians. They got Canadians who are Canadian but have Dutch names.
But they have cool kits.
They do have cool kits.
And nice bikes, as we learned, Whip of the Week.
Whip of the Week, yeah. For the men, first place was Kerry Werner. Second place, Curtis White. Third place, Cooper Wheelsley. Fourth place, Justin Lindeen. Fifth place, Max Juddelson. Juddelson, yes. Kerry getting the win there.
Yeah.
That was big.
And he wore his far out pants, right?
He wore the space pants. At least I saw pictures of him in the space pants. So, you know, I assume they were from this race. He and Curtis kind of the two guys, although Cooper Wheelsley was not far behind them on the time there. They were basically Cooper and Curtis were like a second apart, and Kerry was a little bit off the front there. So, good stuff there. Anything else? Yes, no. No. Let's move on to Major Taylor Day 1, David.
All right.
Since we were there.
We were.
Let me give the results first, and then we can talk a little bit about what happened. In the junior men, first place was Lane Maher. Second place, Sam Noel. Third place, Tyler Clark. Fourth place, Dylan Kerr. Fifth place, Gregory Gunsels. For the women, so this will be interesting because they actually ran these two races together with just a time. Someone's banging all kinds of stuff.
I mean, I think someone's packing for Japan.
Bill's packing. Bill, you got everything packed?
Sit still, Bill.
You know it's going to be snowing
sit
there,
still
possibly.
With your seatbelt.
I mean, these snow pants are not fitting into the suitcase.
First place.
Maybe you could get some space pants, though. Space pants are almost as good as snow pants.
First place for the women at Major Taylor was Sonny Gilbert. Second place, Katie Klaus. Third place, Emma Schwartz. Fourth place, Jen Malik. Fifth place, Erica Zvetta. Also from the Garneau Easton.
Tyler Clark, who's not. I'm so confused today. Out of it.
Well, here, before we talk about David, let's give the men's. Because in the men's race, first place was Gage Hecht. Second place, Eric Thompson. Third place, Michael Vandenham. Fourth place, Travis Liverman. Fifth place, Alan Krugoff.
Who were we talking about who was Canadian for the first part where I was checked out? Is that Ruby West?
That was...
Ferrier Bruneau.
Bruneau? Okay.
Yeah. Crystal Ferrier.
I just heard Canadian champ, and I went the wrong way. And people are going to be like yelling at their podcast machine. But like, I'm back on it now.
Well, that's good.
You're supposed to fake it till you make it, and I think I failed in that part.
And then you brought it up anyways.
Well,
you
I believe in transparency.
There you go. So, David, let's tell people about this day one at Major Taylor.
So, do you want to go back to the women/junior race?
Sure, or just talk about the day in general. I mean, the first word that comes to mind is lightning.
Lightning? Strikes?
Yeah.
Delay, 30 like, minutes.
Yeah, at least.
30 minutes with every lightning strike.
Yeah, so the basic guideline they were using is they weren't going to start the race until it had been 30 minutes from any local. I don't know what the radius of local is. Lightning strike. So, basically that storm front came through and lit everything up. There was lightning every 2-3 minutes for a good half hour, 40 minutes. For people that are interested, Bike Shop CX, we did some bonus content of you, David, me, and Scott Herman sitting in the Sprinter van while it's pouring rain and lightning outside, chatting about the day. So
you called the Sprinter van. Actually, it was the mobile recording headquarters of Bike Shop CX.
That's right. That's right. And so as a result of this, they ended up running the junior men's race. Well, on the course at the same time with the elite women. So they started, and they actually started the elite women first.
Yeah,
was it a 2-minute gap? You were up at the
2-minute gap. I was calling that race. It was a 2-minute gap that got erased pretty quickly by some pretty rapidly running juniors.
Yeah, Lane Maher by the second lap was leading the women's field.
Why didn't they do that at the end of the men's race?
Do what?
Put the juniors after the men.
Yeah, good question. I don't know. That would have been fine. That would have worked. I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's a time issue. It's a time issue because the juniors were running. They had the juniors run the 30 minutes.
Okay.
Or no. Actually, the juniors ran an hour too, didn't they?
No, they didn't run the full hour.
The juniors ran 30 minutes and the women ran the 30 minutes. They had an abbreviated race for them.
That's what they did. Yeah.
Because otherwise it was going to be too dark for the men's race.
That just seems like. Okay.
No. And then the men's race was shortened.
It was shortened too, because I was like, I know it's going to be a no-win situation either way around, but it seems like the women sort of got the short end of the stick on both of that. Having to deal with traffic on their course that was not in their field, which shouldn't happen in an elite race, and then also the shortened race.
I mean, they even considered canceling the UCI races. Everything was done except the UCI races. So they considered canceling the UCI races, doing a morning UCI block the next day and then an evening UCI block, both on Sunday, just spread out like that.
That would have been sort of cool. Like sort of like a one of those
According to Dot, she would have had to have gotten permission from Switzerland for that.
Yeah. And so, according to Dean, he was going to try to sneak it in. No, I didn't say that out loud, did I?
No, that was Michael. That was Michael, not Dean. He was just kidding.
Of course.
So,
and then all the Belgian fans were like, well, just fly everybody to Belgium. We know how to do these things. We'll just have it here.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do this all the time. For those that don't know, that's a
throwback to Worlds in Louisville.
Yeah.
Where the Belgians were like, well, just fly everybody to Belgium. We'll have it here since it's flooding.
Yeah, that's a good solution. So as a result, as you can imagine, Bill,
yeah,
it was very muddy. There was mud everywhere.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah. I mean, just the hills were, they were trying to adjust the course as much as they could just to keep it rideable. Because, I mean, the lap times were ridiculously long. You know,
but this is what people want. I mean, this is real cyclocross, right?
I'll tell you. In the USAC women's elite race, one of the women was pulled after her first lap. She ran a 25-minute lap.
Yeah, that was...
Like I was saying, this is an elite woman. It wasn't like some junior woman or... This was a woman that could really ride, and...
Since we know that the rule, since we learned last week, the rule is 90%, what was the rideable percentage of the course?
Well, I mean, if it was dry, a lot of it, you know, the whole thing was rideable.
On race day.
But I don't think that's how the rule is interpreted.
No, it's not. I agree with you, Scott. That 90%, I think, is as opposed to stairs and barriers and issues where it's not deemed rideable. This one here, for a lot of the elite racers, were smart enough to know it was a running race more than it was a riding race.
I didn't ask how the rule was interpreted. I asked what the percentage was.
Rideable by whom?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, there were some sections that you were just faster running, so people chose to run it, but you could ride it. It was rideable, but it was just incredibly slow. So, I don't know, maybe 60%?
90%. It met the rule. It met the rule. That's all that's important. It met the rule.
So, I don't know, 60-40 maybe at the worst part, you know? Right. So
I'm going with 64%.
Yeah. 64. Oh. Yeah, 64. That works. So anyways.
Went for that too?
It was an adventure, though. I mean, for pitting for the men's race, we pitted for Drew and Travis, and it was half lap washing, baby. And Mr. David Palin got a full sense of washing every half lap, didn't you, David?
I did. Argy and Bargy was the name of the game in there. I shouldered, there was no pushing the bike for that wash. I was shouldering the bike, making the full run. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if this is in your book, Bill, Skills, Drills, and Belly Aches, but it should be. Always pre-ride, although ride isn't the right word, pre-work the pits before a race. That way you know which of the power washers is subpar.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
Being at the power washer first does not mean you're going to be the quickest out of the power washer.
David was waving people through to the bad power washers. He was letting it go ahead. Go ahead. You go. Go ahead.
What was
the brake checker? Stop. I said, go. And then I darted to the right away from the poor power washer.
What PSI were you running on those power washers?
David.
It was low on the one to the left. That's all I'll tell you. It was too low. I think they flatted.
All right. So, well, all the races got it was still really good at racing. Gage rode extremely well the first day. Deserved to win. There was also a huge puddle right across from the pit lane.
Across from the pit lane, but across the pit lane through out to somewhere in like Bloomington, I think, is how far that puddle reached.
Yeah, and it was maybe an inch below hub deep, maybe.
Maybe.
David? Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
An inch below hub. So the hubs were above the ground.
The hubs were maybe an inch above the water.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know, you were there basically. It was kind of nice. They were just getting up, you know, getting up enough steam, hitting that thing, and going through it, and water everywhere, and it kind of gave the bikes a little. Wash the wheels at least. So, otherwise the mud would have been worse. So anyways, good stuff there. It was fun. Really fun day one at Indy. And it was about close to 60 degrees in the forecast for the next day. So all this water gets dumped on the course, Bill. And then you look at the forecast for the next day, the high is 33.
Ooh.
You're like, oh man, it's going to drop like 30 degrees overnight. So, yeah, that was what we were looking forward to. So,
and the other piece of that, Scott, is that field that we had the pits were in, and the half of the course in the field was an old lake bed that was Indianapolis DNR fish hatchery.
Yeah. And that whole area was once a big lake, and you know,
it became again that big lake.
There's almost always mud on this course. One of the reasons why I love this course, I love this venue, is there's almost always down in that section some kind of mud, even in, you know, dry time, you know, when it's mostly dry. The rest of the course is mostly dry. So in my opinion, this is one of the best race venues I go to every season. And this the rain this time just made it a little bit more than you typically would want to see at a cyclocross race. But still, amazing event. And it's just still at the top of my list of go-to races every year. David, it was your first time. What do you think?
Yeah, it was my first time at the major Taylor's Cycloplex. That place is great. It's something that we've talked about and dreamed about here, with that place where you have a velodrome with a mountain bike course, and they do crits there as well as cyclocross. So it touches on most of the major disciplines of cycling. Certainly
BMX,
my favorite
BMX
ones.
Course.
They have a BMX course as well. It was great. And what can you say? The folks from Marion are all about cycling and education. So they do a great job. They have great people there. I announced with Scott and John Hoopin. I knew I was going to mess the name. Sorry, John. Hoopingear.
You can't even pronounce the names of the other announcers.
I know it's so hard.
How can we expect you to do the riders?
No, we just say Hoop. I mean, that's he just calls me Mr. DVP, and I just call him Hoop. It was a blast. I kind of muscled my way in there and said, "Hey, I'll jump on that mic if you need a little bit of help while you're running back and forth to do podiums." At one point, the voice of cyclocross, Scott Herman, had to step away for a moment to do something, and I'm not going to say what that something was, and I just grabbed his mic, and then Hoop and I were doing some announcing, so it worked out great. What a great facility they have, great people. It was great to see there. There's lots of greats there, including it was great to see our man, Lane Meyer.
Yes.
Got a chance to meet him and speak with him and his dad. As much as we've been saying his name and giving the calls, it was great to spend some time with him and his dad and talk about the show and his racing, man. He's doing some really great things out there.
And unlike some other junior American racers this weekend, when Lane came into the pit, he actually got a bike and then rode out of the pit with it, with the new bike. So that was good for him, too. So
ooh, unlike some others.
That's an inside joke. So, all right, let's move on to the junior men at CXLA. We'll just go through these results really quickly. First place, Henry Jones. Second place, Alex Campbell. Third place, Joshua Valberg. Fourth place, Joseph Lukens. And fifth place, Calvin Keen. Keen or Kane? I don't know for sure. In the men U23, first place was Christopher Blevins. Second place, Lance Haidt. Third place, Garrett Gerchar. Fourth place, Henry Nadel. Fifth place, Cameron Beard. So that's that. Cameron Beard. Lance Haidt not getting the win there. That's kind of surprising a little bit.
Well, Chris Blevins has a nice pedigree there.
Yeah, true. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's good to see him racing cyclocross.
Yeah.
Him like crushing on the mountain bike, and a good road racer as well.
And for the women at CXLA, as most of us know, in first place was Caroline Mani. In second place, Sophia Gomez. David, how do I say it?
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, I'm liking it. Go ahead.
Vijafan, I think it is.
Yep.
Sammy Runnels in third. In fourth place, Amanda Nauman. In fifth place, Caitlin Bernstein. So that rounds out the women's podium. Looks like they were having a lot of fun. Great podium shots, everything. Those West Coast races are a blast, at least the one I went to, and this one looked very similar. So
yeah, pretty dusty like the other two races.
Dusty, yeah, they did not have the wind and cold and rain that that we had in the Midwest and East Coast for sure.
Those are fighting words that you're comparing all of the West Coast races, you know, throwing NorCal and SoCal into the same bucket.
They're all good. They're all good.
They're all cows.
All right, for the elite man, Tobin Ortblad was out there. He gets the win in first place. In second place was James Driscoll. I'm calling him James because that's what the UCI website says. Third place, Troy Wells. Fourth place, Anthony Clark. Fifth place, Cody Kaiser. Pretty probably what we would all expect, right? Pretty much Tobin taking that one. I think looking at the times, he won by about 14
seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly the names in the top five are just, you may shuffle them a little bit, but that's the talent that's out there.
Yeah, it's the
they're starting to draw some big names, and it's great to see that we had three very hard-fought races that had a lot of talent in each of them all in the same weekend.
Absolutely. I completely agree. All right, let's move on to day two of all these races. Get through these, and we are back at the Supercross Cup, day two for the women. First place, Christelle Farrar-Bruno. Second place, Cassandra Maskamenko. Third place, Ruby West. Fourth place, Catherine Cumming.
Wait, are those the Canadians we were talking about at the beginning of the show?
Which ones? West and Bruno?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
They were. And Julie Wright was in fifth place. Did you get that?
Got it all now. I'm all straight.
And for the now I'm all messed up. You messed me up. And for the men, first
I got
place,
another question. Oh no, I'll wait for Major Taylor. I got a question about Major Taylor.
All right, first place Curtis White, second place Kerry Werner, third place Cooper Wilsey, fourth place Max Juddelson, fifth place Justin Lindeen, Dan Chabanaugh in sixth.
Yeah, him and Lindeen going at it,
battling at it. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I love seeing that. And basically Curtis and Kerry switching places there for first and second place.
Kerry was the stand-in for Curtis for Stephen Hyde this week.
He was the motor pacer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Gotta have generous.
Yeah. All right, Major Taylor day two. We get up. It is very much colder this day, but everyone got to do their own race individually with no mixing of the groups because we had time for everyone. First place for the juniors was Tyler Clark. Second place.
Also Canadian, Lane, right?
Also Canadian.
Second place, Lane Mar. Third place, Sam Noel. Fourth place, Dylan Kerr. Fifth place, Colton Woods. This was a really good race. Tyler kind of opened up a gap. After the way Lane rode the day before, I was expecting him to do the same. And he and Sam were around each other for a while. Sam dropped off a little bit, but Tyler was just way ahead of him and was able to maintain it. And he was extremely happy to get that win. He came across very excited and very happy that he got that win here down in Indy. Wouldn't you say, David?
I would definitely say that. Go for second between second and third here. There's an expression I'm going to throw out to you, and then I'll let you put it on out there and explain it, Scotty D. Still waters run deep.
Still waters run deep. Are you talking about the puddles on the back of the course?
This is going to be the name of your cyclocross book when you come out with one that you know. There's that the stair, the colors, all this stuff. Your cyclocross book is going to be Still Waters Run Deep.
What David's talking about is on the back. There was a back straightaway that you could see from the start finish line area and where the announcers were, and there were these holes that were underwater that you couldn't see. If you didn't memorize where they were, you were probably going to hit them.
Ruts in there that you would enter the water not knowing where your bike was going. And for many of the elite fields as well as the non-elite fields, a lead was not safe going into there. You had two riders side by side, and then you had one rider. They were looking for snipers, actually, up on the hill.
Yeah, it certainly added a very exciting element because everyone's standing there. You know someone's got a lead or there's a small lead, and you're just watching them, waiting for that final back straight that you could see, just waiting to see who was going to get through it, who was going to hit one of those holes. Did they remember where they were? And yeah, it added a really exciting element to the course. That, and of course, we didn't mention Sonny G Hill or Sonny G Slide.
The Sonny G Slip and Slide Hill.
On the first day, Bill, Sonny Gilbert goes down and does one of those things where you kind of slide on your rear for like 40 yards. And you leave like a big like path. You know, you got all the bike tracks down the hill, leaving all the bike treads. And then all of a sudden you see this swatch where Sonny had come sliding down.
It was a Sonny schmear, all the way down the hillside.
Yeah, so that got her nicknamed Sonny G. Hill. All right, in the women's race, speaking of Sonny Gilbert, first place was Sonny Gilbert, second place Katie Klaus, third place Jennifer Malik, fourth place Emma Schwartz, fifth place Lily Williams. I got to say, Jen Malik, that's the best race I've ever seen her have. She crashed, and so they came off the start stretch, paved. They do a kind of a shallow turn to the right. They get immediately into mud, of course. Everything is still completely muddy from the day before. And everything's fine until there was a little depression in the course that collected more water than the rest of the places. And it seemed like in many of the races this day, David, as soon as they got to that little jog where the course jogged to go through that, we saw someone go down in almost every field, right?
Yeah, almost every field after the hole shot, there was, again, similar to that sniper reference. They were just riding along, and then next thing you know, one person's on the ground and melee around them.
So that happened to be Jen in this race. She goes down. She's, by the time she gets up, fine, kind of rolls up, grabs her bike. She's in last. She's at the back of the field. By the time she starts running, by the time she got through the running section, she ran through the entire women's field, passes everyone else that's still riding, and is now leading the race, running, and still hasn't started riding again yet. Runs almost all the way around to the first part of the pit and just keeps going. Eventually, Sonny and Katie, who are just incredibly strong. Katie Klaus is just amazing. I love watching her ride. But Jen, you know, able to hold off Emma. Her and Emma just battling for that third spot. And Jen can run. I mean, she put her running to good use. And I was very, very impressed with that finish for her.
And Sonny, who comes from a running background, she saw that. Well, she didn't see it kind of happen behind her, but she experienced that, including Jen running around her all the way, and she incorporated that into each of her subsequent laps. She didn't even think about riding beyond that right-hand bend into that mud section. She immediately didn't wait till she bogged down, didn't wait till she was spinning her wheels. She'd get through that first part of the straight, and when she got to where the course turned right in the mud, immediately off her bike and running. And that
kind of happened right after that first lap when everyone, as Jen ran past everyone, they all kind of realized one at a time, oh, it's faster to run. Just hop off and run. And you could kind of see them all hopping off as Jen ran by them. Everybody's hopping off and running from that point on. So, yeah, really fun race to watch there, isn't that second day, that women's race. All right, let's move on. The later then was, of course, the elite men's race.
Before we move on, I got... Mr. David Powell, can you lower your you pot down a little bit?
Yeah, I was going to
overgaining.
I was going to ask if it was just me or if it was all just David, because it's really
check me out now. How's this?
You're good. I'm leaving all this in. I just wanted to talk.
I know.
And
you
then
would.
That's all I wanted to say. And now you guys
go
can
back.
Go back.
Now you can go back to packing.
I'll go back to packing.
Yeah. Okay.
For the men's race in Indy, first place was Michael Vandenham. Amazing. Second place, Gage Hecht. Third place, Eric Thompson. Fourth place, Andrew Dizzle Dillman. Fifth place, Brandon Fix. We saw just the beginning of this race, and then we had to get out of there. But I saw the video of Vandenham winning, getting a win. He was very excited. I mean, he was behind Gage by quite a distance there on that last lap, made up all that time in that final lap. I don't know exactly how or why it happened, but I know he made up a huge amount of time in the last lap and was able to pass Gage and get that win. So, and the shout out for Drew Dillman, the guy we didn't get to pit for him the second day, but we pitted for him for that. Maybe it's because we didn't pit for him, David.
That's why he did so much better.
That's why he did so much better. Yeah.
He had anger in his legs or a stomach full of anger that he was using that we weren't pitting for him.
Part of what happened, and I'll have to double check this with him, is he did not have much time to pre-ride. He almost didn't race. He was not feeling the greatest. And so he didn't only pre-ride a tiny little bit. He came up to me and he's like, so what do you think? And I told him where fast lines were that I saw. And I told him about Jen running in the women's race right before this. And he's like, okay, I might try that. And he certainly did. On first lap, he hops off way earlier than everyone else and ran to the lead of the race. He ran at that final turn along the backstretch. He takes the turn a lot sharper because he's running. Gage is still on his bike, and he takes the lead and is outdistancing Gage while Gage is riding and he's running. He wasn't able to hold that, but, you know, still got him in the top five for sure. And I haven't talked to him to verify, but that's why. But he got off right where I said, you know, Pete, the best place to get off, and ran to where I said, you know, was probably the best place to remount. So, yeah, good strategy, and I think that helped him. So, awesome.
If nothing else, he's smart enough to listen to Scotty D.
That's
sure.
Right. I mean, of course.
Yeah, and it looks like Gage just bonked in that last lap.
I think so. And still rode great. I mean, yeah. You know, I'm sure he still looked good.
Happy with the results for the weekend. So.
Yep.
And
I think
I mean, these guys are pros. They know what they're doing, nutrition and all that. But 2 days of such cold and wet weather, that just really saps the energy from you and your legs.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get through the last day of the CXLA race, men's junior race. First place, Henry Jones. Second place, Alex Campbell. Third place, Calvin Keane. Fourth place, Joseph Lukens. Fifth place, Joshua Valberg. For the U23 in first place was Christopher Blevins, second place Lance Haidt, third place Garrett Gerchar, fourth place Henry Nadel, fifth place Cameron Beard. And for the elite women, I've got so many things here to keep track of with all these races. In first place was Caroline Mani, second place Amanda Nauman, bumping it up there, third place Teal Stetson Lee. Fourth place, Sophia Gomez Vijafania. Fifth place, Caitlin Bernstein. So that's the women's for that. And for the elite men out at CXLA to round out our American six races here. First place, Tobin Ortenblad. Second place, James Driscoll. Third place, Troy Wells. Fourth place, Cody Kaiser. Fifth place, Tristan Cowie.
Nice work.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week on.
I don't know what else there is to say. We kind of covered everything about CXLA, so there's the results. Let's talk
about.
I'll
tell you what. Here's one little thing I'm going to throw out there. In sixth place at CXLA was Anthony Clark.
Yeah.
We all talk about, you race close to home. You race where it's convenient. Anthony Clark is pretty far from home when he's racing CXLA, when Supercross is in his backyard here on the East Coast.
Well,
any word on that?
I think they were going to Japan afterwards.
Yes.
So he flew there to do that and then on to Japan. So I think
also,
that was the plan.
Also closer to his sponsor.
Yeah. I was wondering if Squid Bikes was having a big thing out there. Maybe the company meeting or the company picnic was this weekend.
Yeah. All right. We had a World Cup.
Yes.
Did you guys watch it? And where was that World Cup, Bill?
Bonza! Denmark.
In Denmark. What did you guys think of that place? I thought it was awesome.
What a course, man. It was.
But I mean, like the surroundings in general were just like amazing.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
Right there on the Bonza pipeline with the surf crashing and everything.
Definitely could get tubular there before you ran into the rocks.
Yeah.
From the ocean.
It was Katie Keogh posted a picture of the water, exact same spot where the water was crashing on those rocks today, and it's like a mirror. There's like no, you can't see anything. It's just flat. So yeah, it was just not always like that. We just got to see that for that day. So let's go through the junior men results really quick. Go ahead.
Oh, I wanted to talk about the course too.
No, go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
No,
you got your shirts done. Our shirts done, and underwear and socks are next, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Stuff them all into
the
shoes.
Shirts are placed in
Spend
there.
The shirts are all packed.
They are all packed. Coming right under the 22 point something kilogram limit. Had to ask Siri a couple times about kilograms to pounds, but we got it worked out. This was a course that looked amazing on TV. My first feeling or note about it was that it's one of those things that you love as a spectator, because if you're there, you can see most of the course, it seemed, from like a couple spots. You know, it was like really compact, so you're always seeing the action. I heard a couple little rumblings from riders that they weren't too thrilled with the course. A couple like sketchy turns in there, and the ruddiness of the of all of the off camber, you know, 80% grade off cambers and that kind of stuff. But you know, you're always going to get.
So, what percentage would you say was rideable?
I'm
just throwing it to you.
No, I looked like they were riding a lot of it,
including I would say that
Matthew Vanderpoel was able to ride in most instances 90% of that run up, and then on one time he did the whole thing. So by your rules,
amazing.
Your rules, perfectly legal.
Yeah, that last time when he went up that thing and got up, I was like, oh my God.
Because it was at a point he was like, well, winning races really isn't that much of a challenge. So I need to give myself other challenges. Next he's going to like do the whole thing and see if he can juggle four or five balls at the same time while winning the race. Three would not be
not a big enough challenge.
So you'd have to go, I think, five.
Yeah, I agree. And you got to do it on slick 28 tires.
Yeah, there you go.
Riding a wheelie. He's got to use one of those indoor acrobatic bikes.
There you go.
Standing on the handlebars.
So, the course, that's interesting. I thought it was cool. One other thing we should mention, a lot of those pinch points, I couldn't see what they were saying with a lot of those pinch points. There were certain places where it would pinch so tight that, you know, one person bobbles and the whole thing stops except for two, three people off the front. And that kind of really sets up a weird dynamic for the rest of the race.
Even later in there, I mean, if people didn't watch, I don't know if it's available, but at least look at the highlights for some of these features. The off camber, downhill off camber sections were just, a couple of them were just insane how steep they were. It was pretty much just riding down a wall. And what I found interesting, and we saw it in both the women's and the men's race, actually played out, you know, pretty significantly in both, is that even if you could ride it, that necessarily was not the best option if the person behind you was running.
And cut it short.
Yeah, I mean, how many times did we see that where guys running were just going to take their line and they could do a tighter inside line, and then all of a sudden they're at the bottom faster, and then you're bombing down towards them, and it was just like all of these just collisions happening because one guy's running, one guy's riding. You know,
I think that's what happened to David Vanderpoel right at the end.
Exactly
there.
At the end.
Yeah, yeah.
When that that was running down. Fell right in front of Vanderpoel, who was riding down,
right,
and caught him on the end.
But even before that, you saw Tone and Vanderpoel. I thought Tone actually was making some good decisions by getting in front of Vanderpoel, you know, early on and forcing him into these sort of awkward descents. You know, one time Vanderpoel had to actually ride the fencing. Like,
he went up on the fence.
Yeah, he went up on the fence and sort of used it as a little ramp and then back onto the track.
Yeah, yeah. So, definitely some, I agree with you, Bill. There was some really slightly weird things there on that course. So, since we're talking about the elite men's race, let's give the results for that, shall we?
Okay.
Shell. First place, Matthew Vanderpool. Surprise, surprise. Second place, Wout Van Aert. Third place, Tone Aerts. Fourth place, Lars Vandehaar. Fifth place, Tim Merlier. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. What do you say, Matthew Vanderpool? You know, what else is there to say? Power, stamina, skill. That's it.
The riding fences.
The white. The
he's
white,
like a cowboy. White, he's out there riding fences.
The white bibs.
Oh.
He does have the white bibs with the red stripe.
Yeah.
Lars also in this race. We were talking Lars Vandehaar, the barriers.
Yeah.
We were saying, and I know Bill, you tweeted out about it during the race. Maybe it's time for 25C barriers for some of the men's races too.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's you know, just even it out.
Lars not
level,
having
level
a good
playing
day.
Field. Lars wished there was just a pancake flat level playing field.
Yeah.
And did you notice too, Wout Van Aert comes out top in the barriers immediately? Right.
Yeah.
Off,
you know, I think
right
it, and I almost before Lars, you know, biffed it four times in a row, the first time I thought that maybe he ran into the back of Wout's wheel.
Right.
Because Wout always is a little slower. And it must have been frozen or something, because a lot of people were pretty sketchy on those, or they must have been like really close together or something, because there's a lot of like sideways getting to that second plank.
Yeah, going from left to right.
Yeah, because it looked like, it kind of looked, at least twice with Lars, it looked like he changed his mind halfway through. Like he hopped the first one and then decided, oh no, I should run this. But I think you're right, Bill. I think something was slipping or something, kind of forcing him to put his foot down or something. And so it looked like he was kind of half hopping, half trying to run the set of barriers. And it was just not his day on the barriers.
Yeah, my friend Adam Austin on Twitter was comparing it to Tin Cup, you know, with the water hole at the end where he was just,
oh yeah. Yeah.
It didn't just matter how many times he was going to make it happen. I thought it was more, I can't find the clip. The clip just does not exist anymore. But Jason Priestley as an Olympic ice skater, figure skater. I don't know if you remember that skit from Saturday Night Live back in the 90s where he was just, he couldn't stay on his skates. It's just, you just see like he'd just be like sliding across the ice and it just kept
over
going.
And over and over.
The announcers are like, he should really quit. He should just, he just needs to stop.
And then the very last time that we saw him, he just ran the barriers.
Yeah.
So,
but the most, you know, the most important part that we already talked about of that race was whether Matthew Vanderpool was going to be able to ride the run-up, and he was giving himself that challenge the whole time. I mean, you know, in the middle of the race, it was like everybody was running it, and then he was starting to ride it, and some guys were riding like a quarter of the way up before they had a dismount. He'd ride 8/10 of the way, and then he got there, and he had to, like, put his foot down at the last second on one of the laps, and then he finally did it. And then I don't know if you noticed, I think on the final lap, he just ran it.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't
I did
know.
Not notice that.
It might have been a different section. That's the story I'm going with.
Yeah. It may have been his victory lap afterwards, too.
Yeah.
But,
true.
Or on
before,
his way
before
home.
Before he swam home.
Yeah, he swam home from this one for sure. You know, I think at some point he is indeed looking for challenges other than beating everybody else up.
Yeah. There was a Twitter rumor out there today that he is changing to Canyon bikes.
Ooh.
I thought you were going to say candy brakes, which would make a lot of sense.
He probably has something with canties on it he could go to if he wants. The guy I want to talk about, you guys
even
can probably guess, Tone Aerts.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, by world's time, Tone is going to be a force at Worlds. If he stays, you know, doesn't hit any trees this year and everything's cool, he is going to be a force at Worlds. I just think he's riding with Vanderpool the beginning part of the race. He couldn't do it for the whole race. You know, I think he rides with him. Whether or not that's 110% of Vanderpool, who knows? Only he knows, probably, but Tone's with him and then just can't hold it for the full race time, and Matthew pulls away at the end. But That guy is, I don't know how much we can just say the big two with Vanderpool and Van Aert. I think we got to start throwing Tone in there pretty regularly.
I thought strategic.
Van der Haar as well as part of that big two.
And if Tone and Van der Haar put something together, being teammates, they can.
That's good, but not at Worlds. Because they're not teammate at Worlds.
Yeah, true. Worlds, but we all know that they ride for their trade team at Worlds. to some extent. But anyways, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it's an interesting strategy that Aerts is employing here, and I think an effective one. I mean, you have to do something with Vanderpool. Vanderpool likes to start fast, so he's going to go out from the beginning and try to just crush everybody right off. Aerts' Tone was getting in front of him, slowing him down in the technical sections. I mean, Vanderpool actually looked a little sketchy in some of those early technical sections. And then he just kept attacking and he stretched out. You're like, well, what else are you going to do? You got to do something.
Shot you got is like he did. Try and pressure Vanderpool as much as you can. Make him nervous. Like he's, he gets at Worlds. He's when you shake him a little bit, sometimes he blows up, right? We've seen it at the last two World Championships.
On technical courses. But not even if you don't do that, what you do and what Tone was able to create is a separation from the rest of the field other than Van Aert. So, and Van der Haar there for a while, but then he was really one that created a four-person race that then worked down to a three-person race and sprinting out Wout for that second and third spot. He's even if he's not going to win, and you go in there and you're going to try to win, he definitely was racing to win, at least for the first half. He's setting himself up into a position where he's on the podium at a World Cup, and for him and for his career, that is still that's still a great goal. You want to win these races, but at the same time, I just think I like it. I think that he's not letting, he's bringing the race to Vanderpool instead of before Vanderpool just goes out of the gate and just crushes everybody. And for a spectator, at least for, half the race, 30 minutes we got this time, it's fun to watch.
And as a strategy, it's a great one. You're pulling off of the front, even if you know you can't hold it. Well, now when you're losing places to other riders, you're going from second place back a little bit, not from mid-pack back a little bit.
Yeah, and in that second and third place race was fun to watch. Wout got him at the end. They had a good battle.
It reminds me of the year at Cross Vegas when Sven came and rides off the front and Trebone goes after him. We interviewed him afterwards. He's like, well, what else are you going to do? Just let him ride away, just ride away and do nothing about it. He's like, yeah, you got to do what you can, to try and make something happen. It's a similar situation. I also think in the early parts when they started to slow down, it looked like that second group was going to catch him. Part of the reason Tone did this because, he doesn't want Mirlaire up there also riding for Creelan to get in that mix, right? He wants him and Lars to be outnumbering everyone else, I'm sure, a little bit. And we don't want Mirlaire in here. We want to continue our two-on-two advantage. I think that had something to do with it. But I do think I totally agree with you, Bill. I think it's a great strategy. And
wanting to keep the whole front of the end of that field Belgian, right?
That's right.
Yeah. David, you were you mentioned Stephen Hyde.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that.
Not the best start as starts go. Did he just drop his chain? I didn't hear what the final was. Did he break a chain? He dropped a chain. He went from second row call up to standing on the bridge, watching the parade go by, picking the bike up, shouldering and running. And to his credit, man, he worked his way from dead last. From a second row start to immediately dead last to a 31st. Place finish,
and not so, just dead last with about 15 seconds to make up to get to next to dead last,
and without a bike, right? So dead last, 15 seconds behind running. So it was quite
and they showed by the by a couple laps in, he was starting to pick off riders. I mean, yes. I thought it was a really impressive ride. I know, I mean, it's not, yeah, he's an American rider. We're not making excuses for him. He knows it. But at the same time, that course that we talked about with all its kind of weird quirks to it, not a lot of places to be just, you know, rolling by people. You got to work for all of those passes.
Sure.
So for him to work through that field and make it back up to 31st was a pretty awesome ride, and a little, you know, it's kind of a little disappointing because it would have been interesting to see where he would have ended up if he had, you know, had a chain for the first 10 seconds of the race.
Yeah, I didn't hear exactly what happened, but it looked to me, at least his bike moved as if he and someone else touched bikes, and of course it meant him. He, because of where he was positioned, it meant his drive side hit the other person's non-drive side, which means he, you know, just something broke when they touched. I didn't actually see them touch, but it looked like with the way his bike moved away, as if some contact had been made. And maybe that broke something there. So I don't think it was something, you know, you could predict or see what was going on. And it's just one of those, you know, crazy fluke things. But I agree. Just like you said, Bill, very quickly, he's back in the field, picking guys off, finishing off 31. And let's just mention really quick, in 40th place was Jeremy Duren, the other American in the race. David, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I was going to just also point out, while we're on the Stephen Hyde piece, when you are watching the race go away from you, there's got to be that huge disappointment, that huge letdown, some rush of adrenaline. But to be able to then stay that focused and run as hard as you can and ride to get back to mid-pack, kudos, chapeau to Mr. Stephen Hyde on that one.
Yep. All right, let's talk about the women's race.
Oh, wait, before that, we have to mention, since we would do it for the U.S. World Cups, you know, we have to find first Dane. Sebastian Cartensen, 44.
There you go.
Yeah.
That was awesome. What a great ride.
Yep.
I didn't even see him, but, no, that's a good point, Bill. We should do that from now on at all World Cups.
Well, cause it looks like they got the same dispensation. Lots of DENs on here on the start list.
Yeah, for sure. Women's race, going into this race, there was a big name missing. Katie Compton pulling out. She was sick. Do you know what kind of sick? She have a fever, cold, something like that, Bill, or did you hear?
Yeah, I believe getting over the flu-like symptoms, I believe.
Right.
Let me see. I may battling a bad cold since Pan Am.
Okay.
And just it got worse. I can't imagine why, with the sort of cold and windy and wet conditions they were putting up with. But yeah, so she evidently hasn't been 100% since winning in Louisville, and trying to get healthy. And I think that also, you know, it stinks for her because it's going to push her off the front row, I believe, for World Cups. But then also, and you know, it's something that we talk about a lot with the men in the past, not so much now, where some of these other series are their main, the women too, where the series are just as important as the World Cup, you know, and something that we don't see like in mountain biking, where in cyclocross, you know, the World Cup may not be your first your A races. So I think the Dave Ave is what got her to Belgium for the season. So I think that now is probably her main focus going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're probably right. I mean, they got the Trek connection there, so I think you're probably right. Okay, let's just give results really quick. For the elite women, first place was Sonny Kant, second place Helen Wyman, third place Katie Keogh, fourth place Eva Lechner, fifth place Ellen Van Looy. Standouts that you guys want to mention?
Well, I think that there was a great race between Sonny Kant and Helen Wyman, especially towards the end when Sonny Kant dropped her chain and something happened, and next thing you know, Helen is right there and going by her. Would have been great to see that race, honest with you.
It looked to me like Kant was coming down one of those crazy drops that we were just mentioning, like you were saying, Bill, 80% or something. she, it looks like her pedal hits something and spins the crank backwards. But if I think if you watch it, it doesn't just spin freely backwards like you'd see a free spinning crank. It spins about half a revolution and then kind of looks like it stops, as if something was derailed there. Her derailleur maybe got bumped something and it wasn't going to. So as she did that, it kind of misplaced her chain, as when you pedal backwards, that'll happen on with if your derailleur's not perfectly lined up. And then as she gets to the bottom of that, she kind of, I'm sure, you know, not by plan, but she kind of drops the rear end a little bit. She doesn't set the bike down as calmly as you usually see them. I mean, it's late in the race. I'm sure she's getting tired, and you're coming down this 80% drop. You know, it's easy to not be able to control it like you usually do. So that rear tire hits and bounces quite. And as soon as it happened, I was watching it with my wife. As soon as it happened, I said, "Oh, she's got to be careful. That's really dangerous. You can drop your chain like that." She hops on, and yes, her chain is gone. So I think something happened that right there on that hill with her mechanically that caused that. Helen Wyman is of course able to come around. And like you say, David, we are cut away to something else when Kant passes her back. So we didn't see how that happened. So,
you know, let's throw this out there, Scott and Bill, with the new electronic drivetrains. And we used to see everyone would do a perfect, you know, tripod, pick up the from the middle of the top tube or the down tube and put their bike on their shoulder. Now we're seeing more and more men and women grabbing that bike from the front end and right by the hoods.
Oh, I was screaming at Tone the whole race.
Oh,
he got into
really
so much trouble doing that.
Yes.
And that's where you can hook the bike up on barriers. You can hook the bike up on the fencing to the side. We saw that a bunch.
Yeah, we saw Tone get his saddle stuck on a stake because he was dragging his bike by the handlebars instead of having a hand on the top tube.
Yep.
And that, I think you can also drop the chain by downshifting while the bike's up in the air. Put it down on the ground and bouncing it and stuff like that, and then you just lose the chain.
That's a good point. That is absolutely exactly what could have happened to Sonny Kahn. I don't know that that's happened, but it certainly is what could have happened.
So they should put in a safety feature that you have to be on the saddle. It has to have weight on the saddle before those paddles will indeed engage.
That would stink when you're climbing.
Yeah, well, when you're standing up for the sprint. But hey,
you have a sensor in your shorts, in your bibs, that the saddle can connect with when you're sitting, so that then that's the only time
you
can
close enough. Or a dead man switch, right?
Or a pressure switch. Yeah.
Or the UCI could just raise the weight limit again, so frames had to be, you know, like a pound or two heavier, so then it wouldn't be so easy to just drag your bike around by the handlebars.
Yeah, there we go.
All these suggestions will be talked about in the UCI cyclocross competition committee.
Go ahead,
Bill.
You asked about standout riders.
Yeah.
There was an American rider that showed up who said that she doesn't really travel to Europe anymore. That would be Katarina Nash.
Yeah.
Yes.
In sixth place.
Yes.
Although she would also get upset for me saying that. I don't think so much about the American part, more about because we all know she is Czech, but also that she didn't actually retire from cyclocross. So, but it is the first time we're seeing her in Europe.
Yes, true. Kellen Wyman, probably for the first two, three laps, showing everybody how to run the course, man.
Did
you see some of those ways she was running? A bike on the shoulder was one of the differences. You know, she had the bike on the shoulder versus rolling it from the handlebars like you were just mentioning. And there was a couple times I was just like, you got to be kidding me. She just like flew down that, you know, that drop or whatever. And really showing, you know, we say over and over again how good of a runner Helen Wyman is. And I think in the first two, three laps of this race, it really shows. I think by the end, I don't know if she was getting tired or if Kant had figured some things out. I think her and Kant are running about equal, but in the beginning, Helen Wyman is certainly outrunning everybody on that course. Katie Keogh, Just awesome. The little badger sitting back there. I love the long straight shots when you see her behind Ellen Van Loy. Ellen Van Loy, very tall, you know, and little Katie's like tucked in behind her. But in those windy sections, I was like, what a brilliant thing to do. You know, get behind someone much larger rider than you are. Get out of that wind. Stay in there. Wait, pick your time to go. And then go, and she, you know, she goes by Lechner. And, you know, her and Lechner changed leads, I think, 4 or 5 times. We saw none of them except the very last one at the sprint. So that was a little bit disappointing, I got to say.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
To see those two sprinting it out, and, you know, Lechner kind of coming up and sitting up at the very end of that sprint. But this race, again, the women's race is so exciting. You see in the 1-2s coming in and really fighting it out as they're coming through the finish.
And for Katie Keough, that's 3 podiums in 4 World Cups.
And I think now sitting second in the World Cup standings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty darn good. Pretty darn good there for her. So, all right, other American ladies in the field. In 12th place was Ellie Anderson. In 17th place, Rebecca Ferringer. 26th place was Courtney McFadden, and 35th place was Crystal Anthony. A little bit farther down, 46 was Ellen Noble, and 49 Arlie Kemmerer, with Katie Compton as a DNS. So that completes the women's field. Anything? Go ahead.
Oh, I was
first Dane.
I was looking for my first Dane.
Oh yeah.
Sorry. Annika Langved. That's
There's a musical reference in there somewhere about the Dane, isn't there? He's doing it for the Danes?
Yeah, if there is, I don't know it.
It's old. Sorry, guys. It's a show tune.
So this sets us up. We got another World Cup right just next week. That's going to be awesome. We're getting ready for the Christmas period, right?
Yeah. And who's going to be back for the Christmas period in the women's field?
Katie Compton.
Mariana Voss.
Mariana Voss, I did not hear that, but is that good? What do we think?
I don't know. We got a letter. I'm taking this from our viewer mailbag from Jeff, longtime listener, first time caller. Voss is coming. How will she affect the women's field during the Christmas period?
Well,
she'll increase the size
by one. I mean, I think, of course, she's always going to draw attention, right? She's not going to just ignore her, for sure. She's going to be racing at the front. It's just going to depend on what kind of form she's in, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We don't know. Yeah. And since the crazy way the standings works, I think she's still, like, either on the first or second row, even though she hasn't raced.
Yeah, I think, like, at worst, last season, wasn't she third row for, like, one race or something? Yeah. And was immediately moved right up. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, she could win or she could be 16th, you know. So,
way to go out on a limb there, Scotty.
Did you guys catch that Slow Ride podcast reference?
I did. Okay.
Also,
but will people complain that here she comes just poaching at the end?
Yeah. But
that's nothing new. I mean, that's just what's going to happen. That's what right?
We'll see. I mean, we'll see. Honestly, I'm going to be surprised if she's still able to do that. But I don't know. It is Mariana Voss, so we shouldn't count her out.
I agree. I'd be surprised if she comes in and just runs away with anything. I'd be surprised. But yeah, I agree.
Jeff also wanted to know when the real Tom Mason is going to show up this season. I don't know. We've talked about Tom before.
I think we've seen all we have of Tom.
Tom is doing. I will say this: the true to Tom Mason form in those first couple laps when they were going down those sketchy off cambers and everybody's jumping off their bikes and running them. You just saw this dude like in the drop, sort of weaving through all the people. I'm like, Tom Mason not dismount.
Death before dismount.
Yeah, he is gonna ride everything. Doesn't matter if it's slower. That man does not like to get off his bike.
Yes.
And just for completeness, I'm going to throw this out to you guys. It's from the Broadway hit South Pacific.
Okay.
So go ahead. Okay. I know that we'd be getting letters.
Before or after the potted plants were thrown off the boat?
I believe it was after.
Okay.
Wow. Bill, is there anything else we want to mention? Any sponsors or anything?
Yeah, we should talk about sponsors.
Here, mid-show.
Yeah. Mid-show. Well, or mid-roll.
Mid-show. We're like an hour.
We're supposed to do a mid-show.
This is halftime. People were going for another hour. I'm going
to
be
17 more results to give you. No.
Be uploading this in the United Lounge. Let's talk about Health IQ.
Yes.
Health IQ getting a lot of good press. They're
Tell us about that. That was pretty cool.
I was good. I was going to let you tell us about it.
Well, let's see. There was they were a mention in TechCrunch,
yeah.
VentureBeat, CNBC, Wall Street Journal, Forbes,
and
all
basically
talking about them saving money for healthy people. Right?
Yeah, and
34 to 76 million for healthy people. You know, from a small startup company doing insurance and just, you know, looking at it from a different angle, looking at healthy people, seeing that they deserve better rates, and boom, knocking
it
out of the park.
Well, it's also, you know, it's running it, you know, in the same way, instead of sort of these big behemoth life insurance companies, it's running it like a startup, running it in a way where every, you know, cent counts, and they have to look at all the numbers, and they have to make sure that the folks that they're going after to offer life insurance are both a good risk for them, which then leads to being able to lower costs. So that's the whole thing, you know, and this is just, you know, a sort of a little different approach of telling you all what we've been telling you week in and week out, just because we want you to take advantage of this, to know that before TechCrunch and the Wall Street Journal and everybody else, you know, cottoned on to Health IQ, we were telling you about it. So you can go to healthiq.com/CXHairs. You're going to take a little quiz. They're going to contact you, but then they're going to get you the lowered rates on life insurance, and it is something you should do. We're all not kids anymore. We need to take care of this stuff.
Yep. One of the best.
And we say it all the time, support the people that support our sport, but here, it's a win-win, right?
Yeah,
you're not only supporting them and supporting us with your support of them, but it's a wise choice for you and for your family. Do it for your family. Don't do it for us. Do it for your family.
Yeah. Exactly. So healthiq.com/CXHairs. Go and do that. Go click on it. It'll make it so that we can continue bringing you this show and Bike Shop CX and all of the other shows on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network.
This show is on Wide Angle Podium?
It is on Wide Angle Podium, yeah. Hey, you know, if you join the network, if you become a member, what that does, it allows you access to content that not every schmo out there gets to listen to. Only those who are members of the Wide Angle Podium. And part of that would be the bonus content you all just put up there.
We just put it up yesterday. Put it up. It was, like we mentioned, it was me, Mr. David Palin, and Scott Herman in the Sprinter van. I think if you listen carefully, if you're wearing headphones, you can hear the rain slamming into the Sprinter van as we're talking.
We have to give a special shout out, Scotty D, and we won't promise that all Wide Angle Podium members will get this benefit, but we did actually pick up a Wide Angle Podium member and brought her with us to the racing this weekend. She could experience the, oh my gosh, it's like I'm in the middle of your podcast experience with you and I. Discussing, shall we say, for 4 hours driving to the race.
Is this sort of like what the police do when they have ride-alongs? This is like the Wide-Angle Podium ride-along?
That's exactly what it was like.
Indeed it was.
We could auction
so
that off,
big thanks to
actually,
Tracy Berman for joining us and keeping us sane and playing the referee between Scotty D and I when we needed to break up the fights.
I have a question about the bonus content that you did.
Sure.
Now, David Palin mentioned earlier that Scott Herman is the voice of cyclocross. Is there like a sanctioning body? Is this an annual proclamation? How does this work?
I decide.
Okay. All right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
you know,
next question.
That, just, That just made me think of it, man. That's something we could auction off or offer as a prize, is a cyclocross ride along, David.
I thought we could auction off proclaiming you the voice of cyclocross.
Cyclocross.
Yeah. Oh, well, that too.
Well, we could have our viewers vote on who is the voice of cyclocross.
If you're interested in a cyclocross ride along, contact us at bikeshopshow@gmail.com. No, okay.
Yes.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
If someone's that interested, we would do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so. I know that Sword Panda is really been talking about joining us for a ride along. So you'll have to meet us on this side of the pond, but we're happy to bring you along.
Absolutely. So thank you, Wide Angle Podium. It's awesome. Go check it out. WideAnglePodium.com/donate. Become a member.
Yeah. Oh, we had one other piece of mail here, if I can find it.
Somebody building bookshelves at your house, Bill?
No, they're playing the piano upstairs.
Oh, I was gonna say, it sounds like the band is playing.
Yeah.
I didn't know if we were doing like we were announcing or we were doing a simultaneous Kids Don't Follow.
No. We got piano playing going on. Frank wants to know which of our episodes deal with training for cross. Says he's
all
a,
of them.
He's a mid-pack cat three and wants to move up. I would tell Frank that, you know, although he can pick up a lot of tips just by listening in and especially going and checking out all of the racer and rider interviews that are out there, along with the TDDTIE episodes, another way that you can improve your training and your racing is to get skills, drills, and belly aches, which Frank, you can do at cyclocrossbook.com. You could even like slide that over to your loved ones, and it, since it's, you know, Black Friday's coming up and the holiday season, and they could purchase that for you. And that goes just not for Frank, but for the rest of you too. cyclocrossbook.com/nothing. Just cyclocrossbook.com.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Seriously,
I pick up mine all. It sits on my coffee table in my living room. I just pick it up all the time and scan through a couple pages.
And look what a great racer he has.
And look how awesome I am. So, you know.
Well, you keep looking for that power washer tips, but. It is full of Jeremy Power J-Pow tips in there. I guess I should have added some T Hopper tips too.
Yeah, that's the next book.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll do that one together. I'll edit that one.
I got a next. That'd be a good one. Okay. I like that because I have another next book that I've been thinking about as well.
You've got so many book ideas, Bill. We got to get some of these down.
Yeah.
I mean, the ones you've told me in the past are great ideas. Just got to get
them
down.
That is the definition of success that I am not following through on right there, Scott and Diedenbach. Not just having ideas, but doing something with them.
You need a notebook inside your bed that you can
it's there. Yeah.
In all fairness, a lot of your good ideas you are following through on. Don't get me wrong. It's just you have so many good ideas. You are flying to Japan tomorrow to shoot video at a cyclocross race. That's not a lot of people get a chance to do that. So
yeah, look out for that stuff. I hope. The Rafa Prestige Supercross, I believe it is. Nobuyama C2 race, UCI C2 race. Cameron Beard, I think he's going to be out there. The Squid.
Cool.
Squid team's going to be out there.
Yeah.
Tim Johnson will be out there.
Fun.
The best of Japan.
Tim Johnson's Canadian, is he not?
He is Canadian, yes.
Yeah.
He's a secret Canadian.
Yeah. He used to do that 100 on or 200 on 100, Ryan, from the Canadian border down through Vermont on Route 100. I think that's about as Canadian as he gets.
Well, that and he lives there now, so that helps too.
That'll serve.
Next year, road trip to Canada for a CX race. You know what, you guys? It was kind of sad. I pulled my Sprinter van into the barn for the last time this season.
Wow.
This week. It's already done. I don't have to drive to any more races. Nationals, done. It's crazy.
Magic school bus.
You're flying to Nationals?
Oh, yeah. I'm not driving.
Not driving to Reno?
No. No. But it was kind of, it seems like I just started packing it, and now it's already the last one. So.
The same way.
But we still got lots of cyclocross to watch and talk about. So, Bill, if people are interested in listening to more of this stuff and they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it?
Well, just like Frank, you can email me at feedback@cxhairs.com. You can follow along at CXHairs, Twitter and Instagram. There should be some interesting stuff up there in the next couple days as I hit the... not the road, really. As I'm over in Japan, and that's about it.
Send us a voicemail, 405-CX-HAIRS. Right?
Yeah.
Did I get the number right?
You did. That was very good.
David, and if people want to get in touch with you, how should they do it?
Mr. David Palin on the Twitter and on the Instagrams. That is the best way to find me.
All right, and you can get me, Scott Diedenbach, at cyclocrossnet on Twitter or at BikeShopCX. Also, send us your tech questions for the BikeShopCX tech program, bikeshopshow@gmail.com, and we will read the question, but maybe not answer it on the air. Bill, David, talk to you next time.
Cyclocross neck. I like that. That's going to be the health book that we do. We're going to talk about cyclocross neck.
I'm in.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
That was crazy.